Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, we had a bit of a chat, obviously.
We did. On the weekend's football. Busy weekend it was.
It was all about Forest and what went on in the Everton game. And Danny Kelly joined us to weigh in on that one. What else did we do? Oh, yeah, we had a playwright and a producer of a new football-related play.
That was good.
I called him Ed Waugh, but you'll soon realise that's not right for all sorts of reasons. So I think that should do you.
Yeah.
Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. And, yeah, it was a... Went to Wembley on Saturday, a little bit unlucky, I thought. Chelsea
yeah, played very
won,
well.
Should have won the game, really. But thanks very much, Nicholas Jackson, for ruining my weekend.
I think all the newspaper editors were looking for two more misses so they could do the Jackson 5, couldn't they? And then have all the pictures of it. But they never quite got round to it.
Honestly...
I think the header was the worst. It was a bit of a limp header.
Martin Samuel decided described it yesterday in the Sunday Times as the sort of header that a defender does when he just wants to nod it back to the
keeper. It was a cushioned header back to the keeper. Except it was a striker.
I mean, people are calling for Poch's head, not Posh's head.
Yeah.
Poch's head.
Come on, she's just had her birthday party. Leave the woman alone. Yeah.
But it's just nonsense. I mean, what can he do? You know, it's not his fault that Jackson can't score. And you could say, all right, you should take him off. He should, tomorrow night, you should start another striker. Oh, well, funny enough, he hasn't got another striker.
No.
Well done, recruitment team.
He got in good positions and, you know, he did well. And they were there for the taking.
Look, he's got something about him. He's got his runs are much better. He's not offside as much. He can turn a defender, spin them, all that. Yeah. But in the end, can you coach... That thing, that natural finishing ability.
Yeah,
I'm not sure you can. That's the problem with him. No. He just misses too many chances, and whether that'll ever change, I don't know. But it was very interesting with the... I had lots of texts during the match from people that it was definitely a penalty. My son wasn't sure.
What, the handball?
Yeah, whether...
I wasn't sure either.
What I was sure about was a corner.
Yes, it probably was a corner.
It was a corner. Yeah. We knew it was... You could see it was deflected. I don't know what these referees are doing. And the situation with Oliver and the situation with Taylor, forget about bias and ref club allegiance. It's got nothing to do with that. It's all to do with the hierarchy.
Yeah.
If it was the other way round, if Taylor and Oliver had been in Stockley Park and the other two had been refereeing, would have been completely different.
Yeah.
And that's what drives people mad, you know.
It does seem to be. I mean, I'm sure the, you know, the Referees Association would never admit it, and it's something we'll touch on with a former referees boss, Keith Hackett, in a minute, that there is a hierarchy. There is. I mean, there is a hierarchy, and I would imagine there is that feeling of, oh, you can't saw off Ollie or Tails, as I believe they're probably called in the fraternity. So it makes it harder. So when Anthony Taylor makes that sort of sign of he got the ball, you're less inclined to say, oh, no, he didn't.
Because he did.
Because he's one of our top referees.
That's what was wrong with both of them. All three decisions, the referee clearly didn't see what was going on. Oliver didn't give a corner.
Yeah.
Taylor signified first with Ashley Young that it hit his shoulder, which it didn't. Then he goes like that with the ball as if he'd won the ball, which he hadn't. So all three, they hadn't actually seen it. I mean, that's... The third one was a Howard Webb apology of a penalty for me.
That was the one for me. I will come on to this, I'm sure, with Danny and with Keith. Yeah. But the first two, I mean, the first one was what you probably might call an Anthony Gordon. Mm. And that, in the reaction to a few of those, you're saying, do you really want penalties for someone planting a leg and feeling a contact and then going over. Do you want that in football?
No, not particularly. But
and the handball. I mean, I wasn't 100% sure. You'd think it was absolutely nailed on, don't you?
It's one of those. Under the current rules, it was a penalty.
But the third one.
It shouldn't be a penalty because it's
the third
just
one's
not
a penalty. I really don't get that. Anyway, Keith Hackett's going to talk us through those, former head of the referees. And would he have taken the advice? We'll come on to whether it was a good move for Forest to go public with it. I would personally say not, but they've probably got their own reasons.
Jamie Carragher described it brilliantly. He's like an angry fan in the pub
it
after a game.
It did feel a bit like that. It was a bit like Forest's owner had phoned the sports bar.
Yeah, it was.
Hello there. Hello, boys. Love the show. Yeah, Mr. Marinakis here. Just like, yeah, a bit. And, you know, it did feel like one of those, didn't it?
It did.
But anyway, we'll talk to Keith about that. I'd like to hear from Forest.
Don't think he's got that phone-in voice, though.
No, I don't think he has, you know. But if you're completely backing your team, we'd like to hear it. And if you're faintly embarrassed, thinking, I'm not sure that's going to get us what we want, certainly bringing in a ref's advisor in Mark Clattenburg hasn't got you what you want.
I don't think that's helped.
You seem to get sawn off more now than you used to before. So
I imagine that causes quite a bit of resentment.
Yeah. I mean, look, but that's working on the basis that that would feed into a decision, which I don't think it does, nor do I think the fact that Stuart Atwell went to watch Luton in 2010 and has a bit of an affinity with them, whether in the moment he would make a call like that. I just don't think he would.
But don't put him on offer. That's the thing. You
well,
know.
Yeah, that may be the argument. We'll find out from the former head of the Referees Association in a few moments' time. A few things to get you going on. Breaking news, apparently, from the world of snooker. Hossein Vafai played at the Crucible recently, said, "It stinks. Needs a new lick of paint."
Yes.
And practice rooms look like garages, like you're practicing in your garage. He said the place has a bit of a funny smell about it, apparently. And there's been some talk. Ronnie O'Sullivan has talked about maybe taking it on the road, but it is an historic place. But he's not massively keen. It seems a few of the players aren't, although they've been defending their corner. The Crucible's an historic venue, say World Snooker, and there are limitations given the size of the backstage areas. We work with the Crucible to make it as welcoming as possible, but, you know, it's a little theatre in Sheffield. You can't really compare it, as Ronnie does, to trips to the Middle East. You know, it's not the Four Seasons in Riyadh. So sometimes you do associate a sporting event with a smell, and I've got a classic example of that. In the 1995 FA Cup semi-final, when Tottenham played Everton at Elland Road, they put all the Spurs fans in one big stand.
Yeah, no, I remember it
and
really
they,
well.
And they put all the police horses under that stand. So that's where they were sheltering during the game. So coming up through the stand, I mean, the overriding smell of horse manure.
Delicious.
On and off the pitch from a Tottenham point of view that day, as they lost 4-1. So, but I always think of Nat Narrick. It's like the great smell of sport to me. When I think, I've been to Elland Road subsequently and it didn't smell like that. But sometimes you do associate a smell with a sporting event. So if you've got a similar thing, if it brings back a memory.
It's Guinness Wind at Cheltenham.
Guinness Wind. Yeah, we were in it. We went and watched the Champions League game in an absolutely packed bar in Cheltenham with a very low ceiling, downstairs in a very low ceiling. And by 9 o'clock, it was...
not good, really.
Global warming. Mm. Not very pleasant. So, TalkSport.com, text 1889, tweet TSHNJ. And a lot of talk today, of course, about Sean Dyche in his tracksuit. Him and the coaching staff just decided to change things up. And it was the first thing I noticed when I saw him flash up on the screen. Gone was the dark suit, and he was wearing a pretty tight-fitting tracksuit. I did point out to Mike Bubbins today that it may be the mammoth effect, because you could certainly imagine Sean in training last week saying to him, two words, British bulldog. But yeah, he said, yeah, they just wanted to change things up. It looked like they're, you know, they're back, they're sort of going to work in their their tracksuits. So I just thought he'd spilled something down himself. I just thought maybe.
I don't think it's got anything to do with anything.
No, I thought he was maybe having a coffee before the game and he spilt it down the shirt and thought, well, I'm going to have to wear a tracksuit. But no, it was deliberate. But we were interested today in, if it was on the basis that Sean had done that, in some very late outfit changes. And sometimes, I mean, he could be going to a black tie do. There's been a spillage. I mean, how did you improvise? How did you get round it? If you were going somewhere and had to improvise very quickly, sartorially, as I imagine Sean did, but apparently not.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We said, Forest fans, interesting to hear from you. Chris, the Forest fan, said, my wife said to me yesterday, is Ashley Young's mum on the VAR? It's a very good line,
yes,
Chris.
Good point.
I'm disgusted by the Forest statement, to be honest, yet it was poor officiating. However, you simply cannot come out and insinuate cheating. I'm a Wolves fan and we've had some shockers from VAR, but the club haven't made a petulant statement about the officials. Two of them would have been soft pens, so I don't see why there's so much fuss. Grow up and get over it, says Jack, the Wolves fan.
Well,
in Cornwall.
Wolves have had a lot of terrible decisions.
They have. But I can understand in the moment, but the official website to do
no,
that.
No, you can't do that. It's ludicrous.
And again, I'm not sure it'll do him any favours. We'll find out.
Talking of official things, I was watching the official highlight. I saw the extra time in the end of the United game because I had family over.
Right.
But I thought I'd watch the whole highlights just to see the start of the game. And the official highlights didn't include the disallowed goal at the end. Talk about editorial judgment. Hello? It went straight from the penalty that made it 3-3 to the shootout.
Really?
Yeah.
Blimey, okay, that's nicely done.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
John in Bootle said he's quite keen on the idea of giving the managers the ability to send a ref to the monitor, as they do in other sports.
So, like, that's the challenge.
The challenge
system. Well, that's been muted for a long time.
I mean, in that way, then, you know, Nuno has that possibility to say, look, we think we are being sawn off here, so we'd like you to take a look at that. And again, with all the sort of issues you have around challenges, you're limiting it to a couple, and, you know, there may be a sort of penance for losing one. But what are you a fan of that, Danny, or not?
Look, if it brings an improvement on the current situation, then yes, but there's a wider thing here, isn't there? Look, I'm doing kickoff tonight at 7, and we've just been discussing a running order. It's almost entirely to do with refereeing for 3 hours. Now, people say it won't be boring because we've got, you know, a lot of different ideas about this, but the truth is VAR is broken now, isn't it? Utterly broken. And in any other business, and I mean, I can't think of another business where in a situation like this they wouldn't say, right, we need to put this to bed now, go away and think again. But there's too much involved with it in terms of the money it costs to set up, the people who are being paid to run it and all the rest of it. But the ideas, you know, that's not a bad idea, the challenges, but it's only papering over the cracks. It needs to be done away with and I can have a start again. I mean, and don't tell me, you never go back. No technologies ever go back. We don't have supersonic flight anymore. Concorde came and went because it wasn't quite working out. This is not working out. Stop it.
People who hate VAR, though, will really be angry at the end of that semi-final yesterday because technology denied us a great moment. And it was so close. You just think, oh, bring on semi-automated because that's got to be better than that. There was not enough margin of error to call that offside.
I mean, again, going back to Dow Johnson writing today on that on ESPN, saying that there'll probably be more of these marginal calls with semi-automated. It's not going to be the cure all we all think.
Right, but the PGMOL, Dale Johnson, whoever, if you're gonna start to keep defending this, and of course we saw the bend over Aaron Wan-Bissaka's foot. What the hell was that? You've got to be committed to these things. Yesterday, I spent a significant number of my personal time tracking down somebody, you know, who works in the film industry and who knows about slow motion and all the rest of it. And he told me, I'm not going to give a name out here, but it's an important person. They're not even using the right cameras. They're using something called a rolling shutter. You need something called a global shutter if you're going to try and do things at the kind of detail that was being demanded of the VAR officials for the Coventry's fourth goal. So they're not even using the right cameras. But more to the point, the drawing of the lines is still a human activity, and I don't think that it proves anything. I mean, let the decision on the field stand there because that's too close to be pretending, and it is a pretense, that you can decide it by technology.
It needs some kind of law change.
Yes, I would like to point out that Dale actually calls it the worst of VAR, the kind of situation which makes it so difficult for fans to get on board.
Good for him. No, good for him.
I mean, it was. If as Andy said, it is the worst kind of situation to get fans, you know, taking away a fairy tale moment that would have been FA Cup history, gone in a very, very fine margin.
So, which takes us back to the basic question, Paul, which is more important, the VAR or the game of football?
Sure.
There's only one answer. And at the moment, that is being tilted the wrong way. And people like me, who campaigned for years to bring in some kind of help for referees, we should be put in prison. He's been put in prison for between 2 and 4 weeks, depending on whether you're a serial offender or not.
You and Adrian Durham can share a cell, can't you?
No,
your sitcom pilot.
Adrian Saul is coming. He would be the warder. He would have the keys and only let me out when I've repented enough.
Yeah. The only thing is, Danny, had Coventry been sawn off by an errant Lino's flag, would we have been saying, they've got to bring in technology? It's ridiculous. What a fairy tale moment ruined because they didn't have technology.
But that was when we were seeing people who were two feet and a yard onside. That closest, I don't think we would have been saying it for that, Paul. I genuinely don't. And, you know, people can find me, you know, recordings of me calling for exactly that thing over a millimetre, then I'll apologise. But you have to trust the on-field official there. But of course, we've also got a situation, you've pointed out, Paul, more than anybody else, you and Andy, these hierarchies and things, where they're now backing the on-field decision, right or wrong.
Yeah.
So you get Wan-Bissaka's handball, Jack Grealish's handball, or not, whatever you want to call them, and they just go with the on-field referee. Well, what's the difference with the offside? Yeah. Go with the on-field decision there if it's that close.
The trouble is that there is this high bar for getting involved, and it's a bit like clear and obvious. It allows an out for the referees and the VAR to say, well, you know, we set such a high bar. But where is the bar set? What is clear and obvious? It's just...
I'm not going to pretend to know that, Paul.
I don't think anybody does.
And I think it's a deliberate confusion and a deliberate obfuscation, because otherwise we'd all be asking questions they would find too difficult to answer.
We did get, though, two excellent FA Cup semi-finals.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed both matches. Obviously, Cov deserve a lot of credit. We're going to talk to a Manchester United fan. It's not often you get to a cup final and feel like you're on the floor, but that seemed to be the case with many of the Manchester United fans.
Ten Hag has been getting away with it this season so much.
We're going to get to a situation in May where the Manchester United players will be going to one end of Wembley to display the trophy to their fans, and the manager will be going to the other end to get his P45 and a quick getaway.
Yes.
Yeah, it does feel like that because you know, you had to acknowledge, well, he did sort of acknowledge they were fortunate, but he said it wasn't embarrassing. It was totally embarrassing. You know, to give up a 3-0 lead to a championship team and then just about get away with not losing 4-3, I'd say.
I didn't think his substitutions helped either. He was culpable as well as the players who were complacent, but his substitutions gave them the impression the game was over as well.
Yes.
And of course it should be, but it should be. Of course it should. You're a Premier League team 3 up on a neutral ground. You should be winning that handily.
It was a great... I mean, you must have been frustrated, and it was a great opportunity for Chelsea. You could see how leggy City were. They're absolutely there for the taking.
It's the same as the Carabao Cup. You know, Liverpool had lots of players out. Chelsea had lots of chances to win it. It was the same on Saturday.
Yeah.
It's the real should-have season for Chelsea. They should have won that game. They should have won the Carabao Cup. They should have beaten Burnley and Sheffield United, but they haven't. So it's just left a complete feeling of frustration.
Yeah, and the Nicholas Jackson misses, of course, will be the takeaways. Even though, say, he got in good positions to get the ball, just he's got a touch of the Werners about him, hasn't he?
But, you know, that's what happens when you spend $1 billion and your best two strikers are at Roma.
Yes, that's very true.
I mean, I don't know how much of a swerve he feels he needs to go around the goalkeeper successfully.
Yes.
I mean, he almost left the stadium, didn't he? You can't have that. He's leaving the field without permission. That's a yellow card, isn't it?
So frustrating.
Andy, very quick question for you about this. We know that Chelsea are where they are now. Have they progressed from last season?
Oh, very much so.
I think so too.
Won 2 games out of 21 at home. They've been much better at home. They've played much better football. They've scored a lot more goals. Obviously, Cole Palmer's been a massive plus. No, of course, you know, it's all what ifs, but if they'd beaten Burnley and Sheffield United, and having led in both games they should have done, they're sixth. They're sixth by a point, you know, and that with games in hand. So it's massively frustrating. Yeah. Don't get rid of Poch. That's what I'm saying.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June.
Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
But Andy, in the meantime...
Yeah, one point we didn't mention was, would Forrest have known about Atwell's allegiances to Luton without Clattenburg? I don't think they would. Because, I mean, who knows which referee supports which? If you're within a club... It's much more likely that another ref would know that.
All I've seen is that his allegiances or an interest in Luton Town came to the fore back, because he'd been refereeing for a long time, back in 2010. I don't know the specifics of it, but apparently he was known to have a bit of a love of Luton. But as I said, when it comes down to it, I think you could put Mike Dean in charge of a Tranmere game. I mean, I mean on a very simplistic level, if you've ever refereed your own kids... Yeah. You come down harder on them because you don't want to be seen.
No, that's right.
Giving fame. So, a few people have been getting in touch. Where's this come from? Brian in Liverpool. Do you think he would have wanted Everton to win? Surely a draw would have been the best outcome for a Luton fan.
Well, not really, because Forest were nearer to Luton.
Yes,
than Everton,
quite possibly.
So that, I think that's the reason. I unfortunately couldn't go to the Victoria Beckham party on the weekend.
Because you weren't invited?
Mainly because I wasn't asked.
I've got
a stiff neck. I've been doing the Victoria Beckham pose all weekend.
Oh, okay.
For some reason, you have to look to the side in a sort of strange way, as if you're looking down on something on the ground.
Maybe she was a bit like every photo
there's like that, except for the ones where David's carrying her out of the party, where I think drink may have been taken.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. I mean, there's not a lot of her, so she probably only needs a couple of shandies and
the food, I don't know, Italian inspired platters for starters, and main courses of steak and sea bass. Imagine she had the sea bass.
Yeah.
With a bit of lettuce. And the music came from the trendy DJ collective Hail Zero. No, me neither.
Well, you know, you aren't really the target market for the good people at Hail Zero, are you?
Other guests included
Manchester United,
Vogue editor Edward Eninfor, you'd expect him to be there. And Victoria's hairdresser Ken Paves.
Does he really?
Ken Pavement.
That's always worth having a backup, though, because if the hairdressing work dries up, the paving work's there, isn't it? Does he knock on your door, ask you, saying, I've noticed some of your patios come up, mate. I can sort that for you. You've lost a couple of tiles off your roof.
Determinism.
Do you want to hear from Maurizio Pochettino?
Well, I can do.
Yeah, you can do. Yeah. Yeah, he's just been chatting to the media ahead of the game against Arsenal tomorrow. Yeah. He'll be keeping a close eye on that. And he talked about Nicholas Jackson, not specifically about what went on at Wembley the other day, but his performances this season. This is what Poch had to say.
He's doing an amazing show for the team, running, scoring goal, giving assists. And I think it's his first season. And a young guy coming from Spain, even when not too much experience there, I think he's doing fantastic. Like we were talking, always I said, if we wanted that the player match the icon players here, or the idol like Drogba, if we compare with Drogba, yes, always he's going to lose. But if we split the history of the club with the team and the performance of the team and the performance of Jackson, I think he's doing fantastic. He's going to have all my support, because even if he no score in the way that he is fighting for the club, fighting for the teammate, for the team, and producing sometimes chances, he alone. And then, of course, he needs time to improve. Yes, he's going to be better next season, for sure.
You're being patient with him, Andy?
You've got to be. Well, you know,
What
choice have you got? And you know, as a second striker, if Nkunku had stayed fit all season instead of playing about three games, then, you know, he might have...
Yeah, that's not his fault, though, is it?
No.
I mean, nobody wants to be injured.
No,
it's
they
just
don't.
The way,
but, you know,
it's just,
it works out. Frustrating, you know. But apart from that, you know, I think he's done a good job. And, you know, he is what he is. Whether he'll ever be a great striker, is it? We'll have to wait and see.
Well, that Drogba comparison, his first season is quite interesting.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
Arsenal-Chelsea, by the way, we've got that for you tomorrow night. Sam Matterface and Danny Mills.
It's a much harder game for Chelsea now that, you know, Arsenal had a very morale-boosting win and Chelsea had a morale-sapping defeat. So it's going to be hard, but we'll see what happens. They've matched up quite well with these teams. So would you pay £265 for a cup of coffee?
I doubt it. No, it's not the top of my head.
It's Japanese as well.
Oh, of course, it is. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, they apparently where they sell this, they sell 2 to 3 cups of the brew per week.
Wow!
Can you imagine?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the markup is.
It can only be, however fantastic it is.
Yeah.
In the end, it's coffee.
It's coffee.
You know, how much better can it be than other coffee? It can't. It's coffee, isn't it? It's ridiculous. Japan doesn't have the best weather or soil for coffee, so production is very small.
They take their coffee seriously. Didn't you tell me once you went there?
Oh, yeah. No, that's right.
That's worth telling again. You can't remember, can you?
Well, I can remember because we drove... we didn't drive. We got on the subway system in Tokyo and travelled for what seemed like over an hour
to get a cup of coffee.
To get this coffee.
And you're having a pop at the people who go there.
And the thing is about that place, he won't do cappuccino in the afternoon.
Right.
Because somehow to do with the pressure. Don't ask me. Rufus is saying why.
You can't remember.
Well, I can remember. It was something to do with the power system in his shop. Mm. He didn't feel it was strong enough to froth the milk.
Very sketchy. When you do life stories with Piers Morgan, it's all going to be a bit vague, isn't it? I wouldn't want to be ghosting your autobiography. A complete nightmare.
Do you want a good I love a sporting management. This is a story about a poor hedgehog who basically, for some reason, suffered something called balloon syndrome. And the headline was, Hedgehog deflated after swelling to size of football.
Oh, okay.
So in case imagine how big this is.
How's the hedgehog doing now?
Well, he's quite dynamic. It's a new type of hedgehog. Mm. And it travels through the air.
Oh, is that right? Okay, fair enough. Asked you, Sean Dyche, I thought when I saw Sean in that tight tracksuit yesterday, we've subsequently discovered that it was a deliberate decision. It's like Let's Go to Work, you know, it was the kind of reverse Reservoir Dogs. They said, right, you know, like they've always, you know, dogs of war, Everton at their best, they've always had a bit of that about them.
Yeah.
And he said, right, let's put the work clothes on, not the smart suit, the tracksuit. We mean business. Mammoth.
Rubbish.
Martin in Newmarket, I was interested to know whether you've ever had a kind of late change of outfit, because when I saw Sean, I thought he dropped something down his shirt before kickoff, and that's why he got changed. Got a call from my mate whilst on a bus from Putney to Fulham for a Halloween party back in the day. My mate said, what are you going as? I didn't realise it was fancy dress, but I just happened to be wearing a black shirt and jeans. So what I did, folded my bus ticket up and put it in the middle of my shirt collar. And when I got there, that girl said, who have you come as? I said, Father Karras from The Exorcist.
That's a good
bit. I've got a 1,000-yard stare. I don't think she'd ever seen the film, Martin.
It's a bit of improvisation, though.
So,
good.
Improvisation. And also maybe making a late change, a bit of a wardrobe choice. Maybe you did spill something on your way somewhere. How did you get round it? As I say, subsequently, that wasn't why Sean Dyche did it. But we're interested to hear. Plus the great smells, the smells you associate with a sporting event, something you've been to over the years, places you used to go to. Kev says there is a distinctive smell when you go to Speedway, he says. The smell is unique, as any Speedway fan will tell you. You know, straight away, I imagine it's kind of burning rubber, isn't it? Burning rubber and cinders.
You can only smell it to the first corner and off that. You can't smell it at all.
That's your theory, isn't it? Yeah, that is true.
They hate that when I do that.
There was a very distinct smell at the stock car racing as well when I was a kid.
Probably similar,
I used to go along. Yeah. You cannot beat the smell of a fresh match day program. Mm. Says one.
Yeah,
of, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So there we are. Definitely. We're interested in some of those things you associate. Bedford Town FC backs onto a sewage farm, and if the wind is blowing in the wrong direction, it smells like a Sunday morning after a heavy Saturday night out. Says Corgi. In Bedford.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, now, we do love a football player, as you may have gathered over the years. And this is a really interesting story, one you may not know a great deal about. The player's called Warbella, and here to tell us more is the writer of the play, Ed War. And Jane Harker is the co-producer. Good afternoon, guys. Good to see you.
Hi.
We should clear up war and war.
Yes, that's
very
true.
It's none of them are WAR.
As in
L. Yeah, I get that a lot. It's WAF in the Northeast. Yes. W-O-R. FF, that's how it,
you're,
that's
oh, really?
How it pronounces.
W-A-U-G-H is WAF.
Yeah, yeah. WAF in the Northeast. It's a Northumbrian name. So it's as it's travelled down south, we get called war.
Southernised it. We've actually been Southern Softies. We've softened the name WAF. That's
and Warbella is, I presume, Arbella.
Arbella, yeah, of course.
Yeah, like War Jackie.
Tell us, of course. Tell us more about Bella and her role, Bella Ray.
Well, Bella Ray played in the First World War. Women's football was massive in the First World War. This is something most people don't know, because men's football was outlawed, effectively prohibited in 1915, and it left a huge gap for working class entertainment. And also, the government had made no provision in the First World War. So when you had for returning veterans and injuries and widows and orphans, so when the men were conscripted in 1916, they left huge gaps in the workforce, and the women came in, and millions of women came into the workforce, and they started playing football, friendlies, and they raised money effectively for the injured soldiers, the widows and orphans.
And they drew big crowds, didn't they?
They were getting huge crowds, yeah. Mm. I mean, for instance, Blythe Spartans women were getting 4,000 every home game. I mean, that's incredible. And then when they played the finals, the thing about the Northeast was that in the Northeast we had a cup to play for. It was donated by a Sunderland businessman called Alfred Wood. And the teams from the Northeast played. So the south of the region played to find who their top dog was. And that was a team called Bocklow Vaughan Steelworkers.
Right.
And the team from the north of the region around the Weir, the Tyne and Northumberland, they played for their best team, and it was Blythe Spartans. And they played at St James's Park, the home of Newcastle, and 18,000 people turned out.
Wow.
That was in March 1918. It was a nil-nil draw, and then they went to Essen Park, the home of Middlesbrough, and 22,000 people turned out.
Oh,
I mean, it's just unbelievable, and yet it's been written out of history.
Yeah, yeah.
Bella Ray was a munitionette.
Yes.
And they played for the Munitionettes Cup. So presumably that was somebody that dealt with...
Well, no, they were working in the factories. That was the case, Jane, wasn't it? They were working in the factories and working in the munitions factories and playing football.
That's right. So the women's teams tended to be named after the companies that they work for, hence Bocklow Vaughan, Browns of Teesside. They were all over. But Blythe Spartans stood out because they're actually the only team that were named after a football team in the area.
Yeah.
And actually, Blythe Spartans Football Club gave them the men's strips to wear. So the photos you see of them in their strips, they're actually the men's football strips that they're wearing. And so they decided to be called that, although all of those women who played for Blythe Spartans ladies team worked at the Port of Blythe. There were stevedores that packed shells onto the boats that were going back out to take the bombs, the shells, back over to France. So they packed and unloaded boats. So, you know, 12-hour shifts and then playing football on top of them. They were fit women. They were, had to be.
Mm. So, Jane, this is a one-woman play, is it?
Yes.
This somebody's just playing the part of Bella and kind of telling her story.
Yes, it is. It's not only about Bella, it's the story of all women at that time, but it's based around Bella. And the reason that Bella was picked is, like you've said in your trailer, she was the Alan Shearer of her day.
Goal machine. Yeah.
Yeah, 133 goals in 30 matches. I mean, that's amazing in itself, and you know, wasn't beaten in the Northeast. So the story of not only the football, but actually how the women came to be into the workforce, but then also how they were kicked out of the workforce.
Yeah, when the men came back.
Exactly. And then De Wadair mentioned the fact that how that then led to be women's football banned by the FA in 1921, that stood for,
terrible,
you know, 50
decision,
years.
Really.
Yeah,
terrible.
It's appalling.
It's interesting because I was reading a little blog. You've got sort of Bella's biography on there. And in later years, she still kept playing. She still would love a kick around. But her husband was a big football fan. And even when he sort of when she got married, he wanted her to still keep playing football.
Yeah,
didn't he?
She played in Blythe. It would be an Easter friendly game. But unfortunately, her husband,
he died at the very start of the Second World War.
Mm. But she was a trooper, this woman, you know. And she was like these working class women who played football. And she did play football, and apparently she was an excellent player, but she wasn't the only excellent player. There were players like Mary Lyons, there were players like Winnie McKenna. And Winnie McKenna, who played it for Bucklow Vaughan and Middlesbrough, she went on to captain Ireland in the early 20s. So there was it's really frustrating that there was a whole load of excellent women footballers who never even spoke about their exploits afterwards because, quite frankly, they were embarrassed about it because of the way they were treated as a result of the end of the war, being kicked out of the workplace. But these women as well, you know, there was an election in December 1918 and they weren't even allowed to vote.
Mm.
You know, it was only for women over 30 years old or who had property relations. And these women had saved the war effort, you know.
Is there plenty of sort of archive for you to write this? Obviously, you need to delve into the archives, find out more about Bella and all the other players. Is there plenty there on record for you to work from?
There's not. The problem is there's not. I mean, we have a website, www.warbella.co.uk. And we've done interviews with grandchildren of some of these of these footballers who were around at the time.
Mm.
But what's happening? And you can bet your bottom dollar today there will be somebody contact the website and say, "Oh, I've got a photograph. My mum gave it to me 30 years ago, but we didn't know what it was. It's grandma in football boots and a football strip." And it just wasn't well documented.
Yeah.
Alan Shearer gets a mention on the
He does. He's got a small cameo, Jane, hasn't he?
He has. He was contacted by us and heard the story of War Bella, was absolutely amazed by it. So he has done a cameo piece to camera so that he's in there as a football pundit. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
But he's in there and absolutely loving the fact that, you know, it's been out there and he's well renowned for his support for it. So
she got 133 goals in 30 matches. I mean, Alan would have been pleased with that.
Exactly.
How good he is.
I tell you, a few years ago, Newcastle would have looked to sign her. She would have been great.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, there we are. That's where it all unfolded this afternoon. We go again, myself and Charlie, tomorrow. David Seaman joining us in the studio, head of Football Shirt Friday, and indeed head of Arsenal versus Chelsea tomorrow night, live on Talk.
Can't wait. I'm off for a £265 coffee.
Marvellous. Okay, well, get one for me, won't you? You're never going to do that thing. Anybody want a coffee as I'm on my way in? Anyway, that's all to come. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. I do hope you can join us. If not, podcast available at 4.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.